Now, time to bring to you our regular Wednesday morning discussion with Brendan McMahon. Sorry about that. I'll start that again.
What's his name?
We've got Andrew Corbett. We've got Andrew Corbett joining us this morning with our regular Wednesday morning discussion. We'll try that again. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, good. Thank you.
That's good.
Cameron, today, since I can't do the weather as good as Brendan, I thought we might do what we kind of nearly always do. But just so we're actually going to talk about our five greatest fears.
Yes, my greatest fear is stuffing up.
Well done.
So then we are. I did a nice and big
well,
for you.
Well, I have to say, you're facing it head on.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, all right, Cameron, we are going to look at this, five greatest fears, because if you are defined by your fears, you will be inhibited in your life. You know it. And I know people, in fact, I've got people very, very close to me who are affected by some of these fears, and it can be very crippling. And they're not, you know, like sometimes people talk about our five greatest fears being, for example, swimming with sharks or something like that.
Yes.
You know? And we think, yep, that would be a scary thing. But but our five greatest fears, swimming with sharks doesn't rate because that's not what we're ordinarily going to be facing. You know, and our five greatest fears are perhaps very day-to-day stuff, and it's fears that can cripple and define someone not necessarily in their best interests.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of things before we get going. Firstly, I want to give away, because we're talking about five greatest fears, I want to give away the story of a man whose life is defined by the fears that he recognized in him and how he overcame them. The book is called Madness. It's by a friend of mine, Jossie Chacko. And we've got five of these to give away. It also comes with a DVD in the back of it, which has some, it says 10 inspiring stories of hope. And you can see how people have overcome certain obstacles as well. So, Cameron, when we go to our music break, our first music break, if we have the first a few callers on 633-40-100, and bear with us if the line is busy.
Yes.
We'll give you, no obligation, we'll just give you one of these books. I really want to put something into the hands of people that will also not only inform them how they can overcome some of the fears that they may be facing, but inspire them as well.
Mm.
So that's a book called Madness by Jossie Chacko. So be among the first callers to the station, 633-40-100, and you can have that book. And I'm sure we might also accommodate Facebook. If you're on Facebook,
yes,
just shoot us a message as well. Go to our YFM Launceston Facebook page. If you don't know where that is, go to yfm.org.au, and you'll see a link there to our Facebook page. So
and that's during the first ad break.
During the first, yes. when we go to our music. I know the phone's ringing up, but
yes.
Okay. So a couple of other things as well. I want to thank everybody who has signed the Salamanca Declaration. We nearly have 1,000 signatories to the Salamanca Declaration, a declaration affirming life, liberty, and legacy. That life is sacred. Doesn't matter what the size, the location, the environment, or stage of development, or dependency. It's sacred, and that might mean whether it's in the womb or in, you know, the final stages of life in a hospital or palliative care or wherever someone's life might be. Every life is special and sacred. So that's life, liberty, the idea that we can express our views and be able to share our views openly without fear of retribution.
Yep, condemnation.
And without condemnation.
Yeah.
So no name calling, no public ridicule, that kind of thing. And we strangely enough, are having lots of people call us bigots for actually upholding that part of the Salamanca Declaration, which is rather ironic. because in order for them to do that, they have to exercise a certain liberty to do that while they ridicule the idea of liberty. And then finally, legacy. The best legacy that the state can have is a child raised by married mum and dad, and the contribution, the unique contribution that a biological set of parents who are married can make to their children is relatively undeniable. And we're upholding these things. It's not a negative statement. We're not saying we're against anything. We're actually saying this is what we're for. As I said, nearly 1,000 people have signed up to that, and that includes about 530 women, much to, I suppose, the dismay of certain female politicians in our state parliament who said this was a bunch of old men imposing on women what they can and can't do.
Yeah, I get that too, actually, from friends.
Yeah, not quite true. Yeah. No. Okay. So if you want to sign that, you can go to believeintasmania.com. That's believeintasmania.com. You'll see the sign-up button there. It's a digital sign-up. You just put your name and your email. You can choose to receive a newsletter or not, and that would be appreciated. We really do want to make a statement. Interestingly, on the weekend, Cameron, there were 3 upper house MLC elections that were held. Of those candidates that were in general agreement with the Salamanca Declaration, who were targeted by GetUp and their political arm, the Greens, despite the savage campaigning against them, they won. And that, so congratulations to Leone Hiscott up in the Northwest, Jim Wilkinson and Vanessa Goodwin, who won Leone is a new MLC now, and Jim Wilkinson is a veteran. And Vanessa Goodwin's on her way to becoming a veteran of the MLC. So congratulations to those people who gave general support to the Salamanca Declaration, and congratulations to them. Also, Cameron, we just want to thank, before we get going too far into this, those who have been praying and contributing to what we're doing here at YFM. Just deeply, deeply appreciated. We cannot continue without the donations of listeners. We are a listener-supported station, supplemented by our sponsorship, and our sponsors get excellent value from being on YFM, and we thank them. Okay, so let's get the ball rolling before we go to our first break. We have 5 greatest fears. Now, 5 greatest fears, in all the research, curiously, this one comes up on everyone's list, and this is number 5. We're going to go backwards, so we're going to go 5 down to 1. The 5th greatest fear of most people is the fear of public speaking.
Oh, okay.
The fear of public speaking, the fear of standing before a large group of people, largely strangers, and having to give a speech. It's a fear that can grip people, and to the point where some people just flat out refuse to do it. But then, of course, you end up with situations where you more or less have no choice. You have to do it. And, Cameron, so far this year I've been involved with 4 weddings. And
How do you go with that? Do you get nervous before you conduct weddings?
Not now.
Okay.
Not now. I actually think there's some reasons for that. And the reason... I'll give in a moment, but
yep.
I've noticed that in preparing couples for their big day, one of the things that I like to do is involve the parents, particularly the fathers of the brides, and I think it's just a special thing when they can be involved with their daughter's wedding. Now, of course, in just a few weeks, I'm going to be walking my own daughter down the aisle.
That'll be different for you.
That'll be different. Yeah, that's almost a bit of a role reversal there for me, because I'm normally on the other side of the bride and groom, not beside.
And you can't marry your own daughter. I mean.
Well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I could, but I choose not to. I've told all my children that my role on the day of your wedding is not as celebrant. My role is as your father. Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I'm going to be there to, yeah, be the father of the bride, and then of course at the reception I'm going to give the father of the bride speech. All right, so yes. What I've noticed is that there are many fathers, men, who are unwilling to be a part of the ceremony, largely because of just fear and apprehension.
Okay.
And then many of them have really struggled, not just this year, but I've noticed also have really, really struggled. Not all of them. In fact, last Saturday night there was a couple of fathers of the bride and the groom who did pretty well, and one of them was a very experienced public speaker. But generally, many of these fathers who are not accustomed to public speaking are in terror of having to speak in public. And yeah, there's a couple of things that you can do to overcome this fear, because you may have to give a bit of a speech in front of your work colleagues. You may have to, you may be the father of the bride, or you may be asked to speak at an auxiliary meeting, or you may be asked to speak somewhere where you feel, you know, this incredible terror gripping you. And for some people, it's a big fear, a really big fear. So here's about three things that I think will help. Firstly, the key is always preparation. Don't just turn up and speak. You always have to prepare what you're going to say. Because if you can prepare what you're going to say, you will be ticking off one of the things that causes anxiety. That is, I don't know what I'm going to say. So there's no shame in actually writing out word for word what you intend on saying. In fact, I would encourage that. Write it out. Just write the whole thing out word for word.
Yeah.
And when you do that, there's a couple of things you want to do. Firstly, finish really well. Finish with something that will cause people to want to clap. So just think about that. Yes. So finish with something funny, something inspiring, something that's a tribute, something that is a clear bang, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And the second thing with that is, don't be too long. Don't think you have to go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Because you don't. And that becomes a fear, because some people think, well, I don't know what I'm going to say. And invariably what happens is your 5 minutes sounds like 15 minutes to everybody.
Yeah.
Or your 10 minutes sounds like 110 minutes to everybody, because it's obvious you don't know where this is going, and it's tedious to listen to.
Yes.
And Cameron, I'm sure that you've listened to a speaker and thought, oh, wow, what did he stop for? I could have listened to this guy for it. And you look at your watch and he's gone for an hour and 10 or something like that. It's like, it's just gripped you,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
And people who are used to speaking are usually extremely well prepared.
Mm.
So you prepare well, don't go too long. Here's the third thing, practice it. Stand in front of a mirror and speak. Just read through the whole thing. Just do it. Get familiar to the sound of your own voice. And then the fourth thing is, and this is the fourth thing, because not everyone's going to be able to do this, is work on the style. Work on the style. That is, will you be lifting your voice? Will you be lowering your voice? Will you be getting excited and lifting your voice? And that's what we call style. So,
yes.
So what you write is called the substance. How you deliver it is called the style. And if you can work, if you've got an idea of your style, if you definitely know your content, if you've become familiar with your own voice, then you're going to be much better prepared. Now, Cameron, I'm not trying to sound like the guy off the King's Speech. I'm certainly not here to tell people that if they have a nervous disorder that causes a major stutter, that this will help them. I'm not being, firstly, that naive or even arrogant to suggest that. But this is just for general, you know, public speaking fear, that these are some of the things you can do. Now, that's all well and good, you might say, if you've got advance notice. What if you haven't got advance notice? What if you're put on the spot? What if you are just told to get up and speak? Well, here's the first tip. Always thank people. if you're put on the spot to give a speech, always thank people. And if that's all you do, you've done well. If you sit down later and said, oh, I should have said this or I should have said that, trust me, it'll be okay. But if you stand up there and rattle on about nothing in particular and sit down and then think, oh, I should have thanked someone, you'll kick yourself for days to come. But if you can get up and thank people and just point out, look, there's so many people I'd like to thank. I can't thank you all, right? Just have that as a standard line. But then thank a few people. And then sit down and pretty much you'll be done. That's if you put on the spot. Cameron, let's come back after this song and now we'll take calls. 63-340-100 If you would like a copy of Jossie Chacko's book, Madness, with a complimentary bonus DVD, be some of the first callers to the station now and we'll be back after this song.
Indeed we will. You're on YFM. You're on YFM. That is Ice House there with a song called Nothing Too Serious. That shakes off the fears by saying, yeah, I had an accident, but nothing too serious. All right, it's 8:54. We're indeed talking today about fears, five most common fears in humanity. And Dr. Andrew Corbett is here with us. And I was going to say a few things. You're talking about speeches, of course. That's one of the fifth most common fear. And you said not to talk, don't think you have to talk for too long.
Hmm.
Wonder if there are any preachers out there thinking that.
Because
I know a lot of preachers that would talk for a long time.
Yeah, there would, and there would be. And it's just, I think it's an experience, Cameron. I think the more experienced you become, the harder you work at your craft of preaching in particular. And you begin to realize that less is more.
Yes.
And you, rather than try and make, you know, too many points, you realize it's best to make one point supported by a couple of illustrations and so on, and give people one thing rather than a whole bag of things. Particularly if you're the pastor, because you have the wonderful privilege of standing before your people each week. And so rather than having to unload all 66 books of the Bible perhaps in one sitting, you can spread it over 20 years or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, there's a couple of tips, I think, for confronting this fear. Everyone will be put on the spot at some point to speak before a group of people, whether it be 500 or 600, it could happen, or anything in between. Right, here's our five greatest fears. Number four is the fear of the unfamiliar and new. Now, change frightens many people.
Yep.
And you hear people talk about this, I just don't like these changes. And it's a human nature thing that we become very fearful of change. I don't know, Cameron, have you been overseas?
No, only oversea.
Oh.
I've been over Bass Strait.
Oh, you've been over Bass Strait. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm not sure that's a sea.
No, it's not, mate.
Okay. All right, well, Cameron, you should travel. You should you should get out more, and you should...
How many people tell me that?
You should see the world, because
you're
really...
Are you going to pray for me?
I'll pray for you, no problem. Now, Cameron, it's some people won't travel overseas. If we said, how about the thought of going to India or Thailand or some of these totally radically different cultures, and experiencing something that is completely foreign to you? For many people, they'd have a meltdown if they did that, because the idea of change and unfamiliarity is so frightening to them that they wouldn't do it.
Isn't there a saying, though, that familiarity breeds contempt?
Yeah, of course, which is why we need to be continually expanding our curious nature, because we are curious creatures. We actually are designed and created to learn and experience new things. And I think overseas travel in particular is a wonderful thing. If you can, if you are able to, even if you can just make one trip to, you know, we've got Asia on our doorstep. We've got Bali. You can get to Bali and back I think, cheaper than you can fly to Perth and back. So we've got some amazing opportunities to travel and experience a completely different culture. Bali's a great place to go to because it's close. They're very, very friendly to Australians. Mm-hmm. So it's not a hostile place at all. And it's relatively cheap, relatively cheap. Another great place to visit is Vietnam. Again, it's a beautiful. The Vietnamese people are beautiful. Some of the most beautiful people on the planet, both in appearance and in just their manner. They're very, very hospitable people, and very welcoming. And look, it'll just do people good to experience this. Okay, so here's the question to ask: someone might say, "Well, I'm not afraid, or I don't have a fear of the unfamiliar and the new." Okay, well, here's the question. When was the last time you did something for the first time? When was the last time you did something for the first time? It will answer that question. Are you fearful of the new and the unfamiliar? Are you fearful of change? Because when you can appreciate this, you can begin to see that we do have a tendency to get into a rut, and we surround ourselves with the familiar. And as you said, familiarity can breed contempt, where we just become contemptuous of change and unfamiliar settings. And you see this in social settings as well, Cameron, where you could be in a room with people that you know and people you don't know, and you will gravitate to the people that you know rather than the people you don't know. Mm. It's a problem. It's got to be overcome. Let's come back after the news, Kemp, and we'll go through the remaining three of our five greatest fears.
This is Launceston's Way FM and our Wednesday morning discussion with Dr. Andrew Corbett. Time now for the news. It's 9 o'clock. Good morning to you. We're in conversation with Dr. Andrew Corbett, and congratulations to Mike, Deb and Angie, who have won themselves a copy each of The Madness book, which is written by Jossie Chacko, which we've given away this morning on air. But we're in conversation with Dr. Andrew Corbett about the most common fears that people go through. And I believe we're up to number three now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Our five greatest fears. These are the universal fears. These are fears that you could find just about in any culture. Fear of public speaking. For me, this is, and I guess for you too, Cameron, this is a strange one because this is my job. This is what I do. I stand before people. I stand before sometimes thousands of people, sometimes hundreds of people, sometimes a room full of people. And I do this all the time. And so for me, this has become, you know, what I do. So it's not an issue for me. But for apparently the vast majority of the population, this is a huge thing. This is a really big fear. And I guess for me, the thought of going and swimming with sharks would scare the living daylights out of me. And yet there are people that do that and think, well, what's the problem? So I guess it is what you become familiar with.
Yeah.
But these are common things. So we've seen that the fear of public speaking or speech making is a fear that grips people. The fear of the unfamiliar, the new, the fear of change, that is a fear that people have. They don't like change. How many people now can't watch TV because their old tube analog TV doesn't work and they're too afraid to try the new technology? there are people who are fearful of change. And thirdly, the fear of failure. Cameron, how many books are buried in the cemeteries of Tasmania?
I have no idea.
I reckon there's hundreds of books written in the cemeteries of Tasmania, books that were never written.
Yeah, that makes sense.
How many songs have never been written? How many songs have never been sung?
Yes.
How many superstars of stage, theatre and screen have we never seen?
Oh, yeah.
Because of fear.
Yeah.
The fear of failure. How many people don't go to university because of the fear of failure? How many marriages have ended? How many marriages have never started because of the fear of failure? how many people could say that they would like to do something, but they're afraid that if they did, they would fail at it? I think the fear of failure is a crippling fear. It just cripples people. There's a couple of ways to address this, Cameron. And again, I'm not trying to be a psychiatrist or psychologist or a therapist. If someone has we're talking general population issues here. We're not talking about clinical issues here. So I don't want to be sounding like, you know, we're trying to offer therapy over the airwaves. So if someone does really need some professional help, please see a professional clinician who can help you with this. But this is just general stuff. This is just the general fears that we're all bound by, the fear of failure. Sometimes we don't do things, Cameron, because we're afraid that if we did, we'd fail.
Yeah.
We would fail. Okay, so here's a couple of things that will help. And one of them is similar to how to overcome the fear of public speaking and giving a speech. Practice. Practice is permission to fail. A lot of people don't understand the difference between these three words: practice, training, and rehearsal. When I'm coaching young, aspiring professional tennis players, as one of my outside of church commitments is to help young kids play tennis, one of the things that I'm trying to get across to them is that what we're doing right now is training. What you have to do is practice. And then the matches that you have in your formative years will be rehearsal. And then eventually you'll be on the main stage. It'll be the real deal for you. Mm. Now, understanding the difference between those three key words, practice, training, and rehearsal, knowing that practice is permission to fail. If I said to you, Cameron, here's a 1 meter high hurdle. I want you to take a run up and jump over it. Now, you and I both know how that's going to end up.
Yeah.
On the first attempt. It's probably not going to look pretty.
No.
There's going to be legs gangling everywhere and Cameron, bits of Cameron everywhere.
We don't want to really know.
We don't want to think about it. Okay. So, if I said to you, rather than say, Cameron, there's a 1 meter high hurdle, take a run up and jump over it. I've actually not given you any option. I've not given you any leeway there at all. But if I said to you, Cameron, there's a 1 meter high hurdle. In a few months, I'm going to see if you can actually, you know, take a run up and get over that. In the meantime, I want you to practice. Now, how might you start practicing? Well, you definitely wouldn't start at a meter.
No.
You'd actually lower that hurdle down to, you know, 15 centimeters off the ground.
Yes.
And then we'd kind of take, you know, three or four steps back so we can work on the whole concept of bunny ears run up. And then once you get the running bit and the over the 15 centimeters, we're probably going to take it up to 30 centimeters, which, you know, a foot in the old language. And you're going to become familiar with being able to do that, because what you're doing now is practicing. And sometimes, I'm actually really intrigued at the moment with The Voice, you know, the TV program, The Voice. Yeah. I haven't been following, you know, these programs too closely, but because a friend of mine is competing in it now, Michael Painter, I'm very, you know, I'm watching it closely.
Yeah.
And it's actually interesting that, I don't know if you know Michael Painter's story, but there's someone at the age of 17 was signed by Sony.
Yeah.
And was signed for 5 years or something with Sony and wasn't able to release any independent songs or anything like that. Everything he wrote, sung, or did was basically owned by Sony. So we at YFM, we play Michael's songs. And we, you know, YFM has been a supporter of Michael Painter's work. He's a great Christian singer, songwriter, musician, who's out in the jungle of the world as a light for Jesus, not singing, you know, church gospel songs. He does, but not, that's not what he's trying to do. He's actually trying to sing good, uplifting, inspiring songs. And this is really interesting that Sony helped him, I think, release two singles. And then along came shows like Australian Idol, where people who hadn't done, you know, I don't want to be cruel, but the whole idea of Australian Idol is that you go from being a nobody to becoming a somebody more or less overnight. Whereas someone like Michael Painter was you know, singing in bars and weddings and clubs and churches and then by the time he's 17, he's developed his voice and he's an accomplished musician and Sony signs him. And then as he's signed, along comes Australian Idol and Sony go, well, here's someone with instant fame, instant public demand. We'll pour our resources into them. And he kind of gets put on the back burner. And so now he's 27 and he's gone, look, it looks like the whole music world has passed me by. And he's humbled himself and gone on The Voice.
Yeah.
This is someone, I think his song, was it The Fall?
Yes, Love the Fall.
Love the Fall?
Yes, yes.
That was platinum. That was a platinum selling single in Australia.
Yeah, it was, yeah. That's right.
So this is not somebody who's not tasted some success.
Mm.
And yet he's now had to face up to the reality that, you know, his own, I think he said it publicly on The Voice that you know, his music career has failed in as much as he hasn't got traction with it, and this is just, you know, this is an attempt to relaunch his career going on a TV show. Now, chances are Michael Painter could win The Voice. He is a real possibility of winning The Voice. Okay.
That's an interesting scenario because he's already had that hit success.
Mm-hmm.
What? How's that going to go? I wonder how that's going to go down. But anyway.
Well, it's going to go down in that he's not the only one. Of course, there are others who also did have record company labels behind them, who also tried out for The Voice, Cameron.
Mm. Okay.
And some of those didn't get through.
Yeah.
The 67-year-old guy, Steve, the really hip, cool American 67-year-old who's got through. I mean, this is a guy that's been singing for ages and ages and ages. So anyway, so my point there is that practice is permission to fail. And for someone like Michael Painter, there was a lot of practice that went into being able to do what he did. And it eventually pays off. Practice eventually pays off. And part of the problem with shows like Australia's Got Talent, The Voice, or not so much The Voice, but is that it presents the picture that you don't have to do a lot of practice. You can just turn up on TV, sing a song, and next thing you've got a gold album and everyone's wanting your autograph and you're the superstar, and it all happens in about 3 weeks. Well, life just doesn't work like that, Cameron.
No.
We need to recognise that the fear of failure can cause people from taking the first step. And sometimes in order to run a marathon, you have to take the first step. In, you know, how do you walk 5,000 miles? Well, it starts with the first step. And that's where practice comes into it. So you might want to be an aspiring author. I guarantee you the first thing you write will be rubbish. And you might think it's not, and you might publish it, and the public might let you know what it really was. It was rubbish. And this is where I had, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I had someone say to me, never publish anything before the age of 40.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. Before these shows like Australian Idol and X Factor and so on came along, it was common that an artist or a band who went on to become hugely successful, their first album is an absolute failure.
Yep.
So, yeah, what you say is right.
Yeah, there's lots of stories like that where a successful author, his first book or two, are just flops. Mm. Just flops. Mm. And you can imagine how, if they said, well, I failed, I'm just going to hope the ground opens up and swallows me and I'm done for. Look, life will test people. And sometimes failure is a test. Don't waste the test. Learn from it. And if you can learn from failure, you can actually grow as a person. Cameron, let's come back after this song. We've got the last two. Well, look, I've got a couple more of these Madness books by Jossie Chacko with the complimentary DVD in it. First couple of callers on 63-340-100. You can have your complimentary copy of this book. It kind of, here we are talking about how you can deal with fear. And this book will inspire people to deal with fear as well. So be the first couple of callers on 633-40-100 and you can have your complimentary copy of Madness. Let's come back after this song.
Okay, you're on YFM. This is a song now from Rebecca St. James. It's called Don't Worry. Yeah, it's a great song from Rebecca St. James. It's called Worry, or Don't Worry, in fact. And that picks it up from a section of the Bible in Matthew where it talks about don't worry about your life. You're on Launceston's YFM, and we're talking today with Dr. Andrew Corbett about the five most common fears in people. And we're up to number two, are we?
Number two. Yes, we are, Karen. So we have these fears that can grip people, and they can inhibit people, they can stop people from reaching their fullest potential. And we've seen that giving a speech, public speaking, can most people say, in fact, in a lot of the research, it comes up as one of the top two fears that people have, the fear of having to speak in public. And then we've seen that some of these other fears, the fear of the new, the unfamiliar, can grip people as well, the fear of change. And we've seen the fear of failure can also cripple people. And we've seen that how these fears can be overcome as well. All right, fear number two, the fear of rejection. The fear of rejection. Now, this one, we might put a sub fear in this one, and it's the fear of loneliness.
Yes.
It's interesting doing a survey of women to men that women will often put the fear of being alone. Now, a lot of guys, most guys that I've spoken to and in the preparation for this, they don't list that. They don't list the fear of being alone. Now, that actually tells me that there's something fundamentally different about men and women, and how men and women relate. Men and women socially, we have different needs. And this one, the fear of rejection, this grips everybody. The fear of being rejected. It's one of the most painful experiences you can go through. The fear of being rejected. Okay, here's a couple of problems with this fear. It's firstly, often grounded in being rejected by people that don't really matter. It's often that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not always that, but it's often that. So, for example, Cameron, if you had a random person post on the YFM Facebook wall, you know, some negative comment about what you're doing, you didn't know them, you don't know who they are, I know what it would do to you. It would affect you, and you wouldn't be alone in feeling that way. But, you know, the reality is this person may not even be a listener. This person may not even have any basis for what they're saying. It may just be someone who is offering a criticism without any basis at all. It may be. And this thing called Facebook is a really, it can be exceptionally cruel because,
yeah,
for those who aren't familiar with it, when you connect with somebody on Facebook, for some bizarre reason, they're called not a connection, but a friend.
Yes.
It's a cruel term because most of the people that you connect with are actually not your friends. They're something, and I'm going to call them connections, but they're not really your friends. And so here's the problem, Cameron. When you connect with these people, and then here's the other cruel word, and this word, I don't think this word was even invented before Facebook. But then de-friend you.
Yes.
How does that feel?
Not good.
Isn't that bizarre?
And sometimes I do it without telling you.
Well, in fact, for me, it's every time.
Yes.
I've never had anyone say, oh, by the way, I'm going to defriend you today.
Yeah,
yeah. I've never True, had that.
Yes.
And, Cameron, I'm a reasonably emotionally stable sort of guy and reasonably emotionally secure. And you look at your Facebook friend numbers plummeting and you think, what's going on with this?
Yes.
And of course, Facebook doesn't tell you who. I don't know that there's a particular way of finding out who has, quote-unquote, defriended you. Isn't that a horrible word, to defriend?
Yes, it is.
But the fear of rejection can cause people to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do. It can cause people to compromise in ways that they ordinarily wouldn't compromise. It can cause people to, and I'm not a big fan of this word, but I'll use it, it can cause people to diminish their values.
Yeah.
Okay. So, when we look at this fear of rejection, we firstly have to figure out, is what I'm feeling actually rejection, or is what I'm feeling criticism? Because sometimes people can criticize, and Cameron, you and I both get our fair share of criticism.
Yep.
And we both know that there are some people who criticize to hurt us, and there are some people that criticize to help us.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's very difficult to tell the difference, but after a while you pick it up. And this is where we need to distinguish between rejection and criticism. And I would offer this piece of advice. Treat criticism as a gift and don't worry about whether someone intends to hurt you or help you with it. Treat criticism as a gift. That way, you're actually able to thank the person for the criticism. And then consider it, weigh it up. They said, I do this, and I now need to consider, I do this? And is this something that needs to change? That's the first thing. Secondly, when it comes to the fear of rejection, I think there's something we need to understand about how life's going to work. Not everybody will accept you. So, for example, you know, the story of Billy Graham, who was in college and he was infatuated with a girl, and it was a dormitory-style college, and so one night he decided to buy chocolates and flowers and, you know, he'd had a real interest in this girl, taking her out quite a few times, and he box of chocolates under his arm, flowers under his arm, in his hand, and he goes around to the dorm, knocks on the girl's door and asks to take her out, and this night he's going to propose to her. And there he is, standing, box of chocolates under his arm, flowers in his hand. The girl opens the door, the love of his life, totally infatuated with this girl. And he says, you know, will you marry me? And she says, oh, Billy, there is no way I would marry a man who is so spiritually shallow as you. Later that night, Billy's friends found him in the middle of the football field, in the rain, with a wet bunch of flowers and a half-eaten box of chocolates. And they picked him up and brought him back to his room. The rest is, as we say, kind of history, where that college where Billy was involved went on a tour to England. And they toured the house of John Wesley. And the tour guide said, here's John Wesley's bed. See those two marks in the carpet? That's where he put his knees every day for 38 years and prayed to God for the salvation of England. Then they moved on to the next room, and then eventually someone said, where's Billy? They went back to the room, and there Billy was, kneeling with his knees in those knee prints, hands clasped, head bowed, praying to God, take my life. use me. And of course, the rest is history.
Mm.
And I don't know how that girl felt, you know, saying, I don't want someone as spiritually as shallow as you. I don't know if she realized that that rejection actually gave birth to the Billy Graham the world now celebrates.
Yeah.
So rejection will happen. It will happen. And we can use it not to become bitter, but to become better. Here's the last one, Cameron. We haven't got a whole lot of time to unpack this one, but let's introduce it and say that if people really want help with this, I'm going to encourage them to talk to their local pastor. Pastors are the best people in society to deal with this fear. It's the fear of death.
Yeah.
It's the number one fear, the fear of death. Some people have an irrational fear of death. Some people have a blasé, apparently blasé approach that they will claim they're not afraid of death, that they don't fear it at all. Put them in the situation where death is staring them down and suddenly all their bravado goes out the window and it becomes very obvious that they are gripped by fear of death. Cameron, there is a way to find a solution to this because there is something deep in every human soul that says life does not consist of what happens just between the cradle and the grave. Life goes on beyond the grave. And you can deny it. You can come up with intellectual reasons why that's not true. You can reason it away. But there is something deep in the core of your soul that will continually tell you otherwise. Because it is otherwise. Life does not end at the grave. And the thought of that, the intuitive thought of that, that we will live on beyond the grave, having stood before our Maker, to whom we will give an account, there is something intuitive in the heart of every person that says, what I do in this life matters for eternity. And it's that fear of having to give an account of our lives that grips people.
Mm.
And Cameron, if I could just say, in Hebrews, it actually talks, I think it's in chapter 2, it actually describes the fear of death as the greatest fear known to man. The fear of death. And it says this, Jesus Christ has broken the fear of death. If you come to know Christ, you have good reason not to fear death, but to have peace with God. And it's on that thought, Cameron, that I want to leave. Thank you, and we'll be back next Wednesday for another controversial Wednesday discussion.
Thank you, Dr. Andrew Corbett, and you can catch him on Thursday night. Yep, tomorrow night at 8:30 on Finding Truth Matters, and this message, of course, will be uploaded onto our website shortly, so you can download it to your computer if you would like it. You're in Launceston's YFM. It's 9:34 on 105.3, 98.1, and streaming from the web at yfm.org.au/streaming. Carl Faye's now with today's Daily Nudge.